Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including 200 great stations and XM Channel 166 now, but we're moving to Channel 244 in about a week. So if you listen on XM, look for us on a new channel. I'll let you know when that happens. This is our show from Saturday, May 4th, 2013, episode 975. Enjoy! The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, or other smartphone is worth at gazelle.com. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, your worst nightmare. A geek with his own radio show. I'm going to talk about computers and the internet. Intel and AMD, Windows. And actually, we're going to have some fun doing it. Because you know what? Nowadays, technology is all about personal technology, stuff you have in your pocket. We'll talk about smartphones. We've got the two hot smartphones right now in my pocket. The Galaxy S4 from Samsung, which I just got the other day. And then also, of course, I've been playing, as you know, with the HTC One. And some interesting pros and cons on both. Nothing's perfect, I guess. That's bad news, isn't it? Are you looking for the perfect smartphone? Well, I'll give you the pros and cons on both. I'll talk about my experiment with my mom. Poor mom. She came out here. My mother's 80 years old. She's I'm using her as a guinea pig because she's a normal user. In that she's not a geek by any means. She understands technology a little bit, and she uses it. She's got an iPad, an iPod, and a computer. I gave her her first smartphone, the Galaxy Note 2, so we've been playing with that. I set her up on LastPass. I talked about this in the previous shows, so that her passwords would be safe. And now the latest, and I mentioned I would do this last week, is how can she wants to see pictures of the grandkids, see what people are up to. I said, well, Mom, everything's on Facebook, you know. Will and Grady are posting on Facebook. My kids, Abby and Henry, post on Facebook. I post on Facebook. If you want to see what's going on, you probably should be on Facebook. She said, well, I don't want to be on Facebook. I think she doesn't want her old boyfriends to find her. I don't know. She wants to be private. And so the experiment of the week with Mom, I should come up with a name for this. Mom's experiment number 4 is, can we make a Facebook page that she can use that is private? In the chat room, Truckee says, easy answer, Leo. Just send Mom prints. Probably what Mom really would like is I should go to Costco and get some prints. That's probably what she wants. But no, she's the Tech Guy's mom. She has to do it the hard way. The Tech Guy's mom. What a curse. I've done it, and I think I've done it successfully. I've set her up with a Facebook page. Man, they hide this stuff. It is not easy to do this. If you go to Facebook, of course the default is public, not private. But they also do all sorts of they bury settings and so forth. But if you go into the settings on your Facebook page, I believe it's possible to make yourself somewhat invisible. There is a privacy tab in the settings, and it says, who can see my stuff? Now, I'm public, because I don't mind. In fact, for me, I use Facebook as much to tell people what I'm up to. I allow subscribers and so forth. But I also am going to, now that I'm, aware that Mom is using Facebook, I'll post some stuff that's visible to family only, right? So who could see your future posts? You can edit that and say you have your choice between public, friends, only me, which I'm not sure why only me exists. I'd like to post stuff and only I can see it. I guess it was, it's like a vault. Friends would be good. And so I'm going to, I said for her, I said friends. And the reason I said friends is because I am going to also limit who her friends are, right? So you can even, and this is nice, you can go back to posts you've already shared with the public and make the, and limit them back, set them back down to friends only, right? Then it says, who can look me up? And I'm saying, no one can look me up. That's the one she's really afraid of. But there's no setting for that. It's everyone, friends of friends or friends. So set that for the most secure, which is friends, right? If you set it to friends, then you control who can look you up because you only friend people you want to be able to find you, right? Do you want other, and this is the big one, I think, do you want other search engines to link to your timeline? And when this setting is on, it says it's easier for other search engines, that means Google, right, to link to your timeline search results. It may mean more Bing than Google because Bing has a, you know, Microsoft's Bing search engine has a deal with Facebook. So on her page, I unchecked that. I said, no, don't let engines, don't, for search engines link. That doesn't mean they don't find you, by the way. And this is where Facebook's unclear. Do you want other search engines to link to your timeline? It's not the same as do you want to show up? And I'm going to have to play with this to see what that means. But it, notice they don't say, do you want to be invisible to Google? That's what they should say. I don't think that's what they're talking about. So you don't have as much privacy as you'd probably like. But you can set it as locked down as possible. And then I make sure that only people who are friends can see anything. And I also say that, now this is actually kind of tricky because I do want to add the grandkids, right? But the way I've got it set right now is only friends of friends can invite you. You can't make it any, you know, can say, could you give you friend requests? You can't make it any more restricted than that. I don't want her to be inundated with friend requests. But at the same time, I want her to be able to add the grandkids and me and so forth. Who can add things on my timeline? You can edit that. Make that as restrictive as possible. Friends are only me. I'll set that to only me, right? Because we don't want anything to show up on her timeline at all. And I'm going to give her the instruction. Don't post anything on your timeline. That's bad because then people can see you. Review posts friends tag you in before they appear on your timeline. Turn that on. By the way, Facebook made a big change to its Instagram product this week that allows you to tag people on Instagram. Now, right now, they did an interesting thing. They said, well, for the first few weeks, we're going to let you get used to this. But middle of the month, they're going to turn this feature on, and all of a sudden, people will be taking pictures of you, tagging you on Instagram. And I suspect because Facebook owns Instagram, that'll also add your picture to Facebook, photos of you of Facebook, right? And all of a sudden, there'll be this flood of pictures of you. So we want to really limit that. Who can see things on my timeline? Only friends. You have the choice between everyone, friends of friends, friends, only me, custom, close friends. You know, I should dig down deeper into what custom means. I guess custom means I can pick, let's see, share this with, oh, so each you could say specific people. So you can say, see, this is good. She can say, I only want the grandkids and my kids to see this. No one else. So now she'll have a Facebook page, which can't be searched for, I hope, which can't be, there's nothing on it, so nobody who goes there will see it. I didn't give her a profile picture, didn't give her any information, nothing. And I lied about her age is another thing. By the way, we're finding this out. Nobody tells the truth about it, especially if you're a kid or older. Everybody's 100. So I made her 100. Sorry, Mom. That's a little close to the truth, isn't it? Make 200. How about that? I don't think they have that as an option. You also, so you want to make no information on that page that people could use. And now she can log into her Facebook page, not to post stuff, but just to see what her friends and kids and grandkids are doing. I think this is going to work. We'll see. I think this is going to work. It's reasonable, don't you think, for somebody to say, look, I want to see what you're posting, but I don't want to have a Facebook account. I want to see what my grandkids are doing, but I don't want anybody to know I'm around. I want to be antisocial. You should have the right to do that. This is an experiment. I say it's an experiment because I can't say definitively this is going to work. Because you never know with Facebook, do you? It's the problem, isn't it? I understand why people are a little squirrely about it. Anything can happen. It's a shame that Facebook's so complicated. And yet, there is a real value, I think, to being able to share photos and events with family and friends this way. 8888-ASK-LEO. Yeah, I'll assign close friends, right? And use that as the setting for most of these. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Sorry.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. With our brand new call screener, week two for HH. Hey, Heather.
Hey.
Oh, I love it. There's a real person in here. Bob's visiting from Chico. He said, I just wanted to say how much better last week's show was with Heather in studio. It just made a huge difference. So now, see, this is different because we work on weekends. So now, instead of saying, as you would normally on a Monday, did you have a good weekend? I'm going to say, did you have a good week? But for Heather, that's good because she needs 5 days to party. Two's just not enough.
Exactly.
So you had a good week?
Yeah. Saw a lot of live music.
That's awesome.
Went to a going away party. Really fun.
Next weekend, and we're going to have to go on the weekdays, is a big first time ever show. You know, they have these now, these outdoor festivals. They go for 4 days. This is called Bottle Rock. Because it's in Napa, where the wine is. So it's wine and music.
Super pumped.
So we're going to go to Bottle Rock.
Are you going to shoot a bunch of stuff? And
no.
Then share it with
I'm
the
going,
listeners?
Lisa and I are just going to go to enjoy the music. But you said Friday's a good day?
Oh, Friday's the best.
Yeah,
Flaming Lips, Shins,
Flaming Lips and the Shins. This is like body parts. Are they going to have the wonderful hip bone performing? The thigh bone?
I didn't even think of that.
The skulls, the shins, it's crazy. No, I actually am a big fan of the Flaming Lips. I've interviewed Wayne Coyne. He's quite the geek, you know. Really
yeah.
into technology.
He'd be fun to have on.
Well, maybe when he's in town. Hey, Wayne, come on over. One thing he does, it's a little weird. They have a giant inflatable ball that he gets into, like a gerbil, one of those gerbil balls, and he rolls over the crowd.
Yeah.
And it plays music when they hit it. It's a weird thing.
That seems really scary to me, but good for him.
I have crowd surfed. I actually hold the world's record for the longest crowd surf. Longest live streamed crowd surf because I had a live camera and microphones, and I was, I think, a couple of minutes in the air. And after I did it, somebody told me that it's incredibly dangerous. They could drop you. So I'm not doing that anymore. But I did it once, and I'm happy about it. Do we have a call? Who should we take first, Heather? You get to pick.
Wow. I like Mike in Seattle.
I put the pressure on Heather. So I see. Sorry, everybody else. It was Heather who chose Mikey.
Hey, that's good. Yeah. But he's a DJ, so that's kind of cool.
All right, let's say hi to Mikey. Thank you, Heather. Hi, Mikey. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, and happy Saturday to you.
You
and
too.
By the way, Heather is the bomb. So
we're so happy to actually have live people in here with me.
Oh, yes, I bet. You don't get so lonely anymore. So my question to you is, I'm a DJ, and I use a program called Scratch Live, also known as Serato. And I've been using PCs for quite some time now. And what I'm doing, I'm getting my first MacBook. Now, it is a used one. It's a MacBook 13-inch. It's a late 2008 model. It's a Core 2 Duo. And it's only got a 250-gig hard drive in it. And I want to upgrade it to a 750 or a 1 terabyte. Now, in swapping that out, I know Apple is real proprietary. Will any 2.5-inch hard drive work? That'd be my first question. And then the second part is I want to install a fresh copy of Snow Leopard. Unfortunately, the MacBook will not be coming with the original install disk. So I need to know is do I have to get model-specific disk?
So you didn't say this is a Duo, did you?
Yeah,
I thought you said this
was
a Core. Oh, it's a Core 2 Duo. Okay.
Yes.
There was a Mac called the PowerBook Duo, which is so old that I don't think you could actually play music on it. It's a Core 2 Duo. What model of MacBook is it?
It's an A1278.
Okay. First thing I would do is go to a place called Otherworld Computing. They're at Mac.
I'm already there.
Okay. MacSales.com. They sell replaceable, you know, hard drive replacements. I've bought many. In fact, I replace almost all my hard drives with SSDs from Otherworld Computing. They're Mac-specific, so if they say it will fit in your Mac, it will.
Okay.
But the truth of it is almost any, on that one, I believe, almost any hard drive designed for a laptop will work fine. Laptop connectors are different. But, okay. You know, a 2.5-inch means it's going to be for a laptop in most cases, so you shouldn't have any trouble with that.
Okay. Now, putting a fresh copy, like I said, it does not cost...
So when you buy, if you can buy it, it may not be able to buy it anymore. Do you have a disc, a Snow Leopard disc lying around?
No. This is my first Mac ever.
Yeah.
So I have...
I think you might be able to run Mountain Lion on it. So... A couple of things you could do at this point. I would go to Mountain Lion if you can. I don't see any reason not to. You'll have to check the compatibility. The chat room should know. But Apple does sell Snow Leopard. When you buy a standalone CD or a DVD, in this case, of an operating system from Apple, it installs on any Mac it's compatible with. You don't have to get a model specific.
Okay, great.
So if that's the latest one you can run on that machine, I would get the latest version of OS X you can run on that machine.
Yeah, I do know that it will support Mountain Lion. Serato seems to run a little bit less glitchy on Snow Leopard.
So you know the program that you're using will prefer Snow Leopard.
Yes, yeah. It will run on Mountain Lion as well, but I have to do a bunch of little different configurations as far as buffers go.
Yeah, like so when they update Serato, you can then you'll have the Mac App Store on your computer because Snow Leopard has that, and then it's a snap, and it's I think $30 to upgrade to Mountain Lion. Very easy.
Okay.
So yes, if you buy the disc, the Snow Leopard disc, that's designed for all Macs.
It is. So it would load the drivers for the MacBook.
Yep.
Going that far back.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Yep.
That's what I need to know.
And Apple apparently still sells it. We'll put the link in the show notes, James. If you're noticing this, it's in the chat room. Thanks to Jim San Marcos, Apple still sells Snow Leopards. I guess because some of their older models require it. So it's $19.99.
Woohoo.
I know. Isn't that great?
That is a lot better than buying a fresh copy of Windows.
Yeah. And the reason I think they still sell this is because this is the minimum OS you can use to have the App Store so that you can go to Mountain Lion.
And when I get Mountain Lion, is that going to have like the, what was it called, iLife, like all the...
No, none of these come with that. It only comes with a new computer. Apple sells those separately. If you buy a new Mac, and since you didn't get the original install disk, you won't have it. If you buy a new Mac, you get the iLife package.
Gotcha. And my last little piece of the question, when I add this to my the MacBook to my home network, like on my main PC, I use Adobe Premiere to cut and paste video and whatnot and put it in MP4. I will have no problems swapping files back and forth on my network via the Mac and PC and vice versa.
That's an interesting question. Certainly not the videos. The Adobe Premiere files, I would guess, would be compatible, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay.
You like the project files that you would use?
No. I was actually referring to as the end result. I just want to make sure.
The
PC will be.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Synonymous.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. It'll be transparent to you. It'll work just great.
Great. Well, Leo, you have answered all my questions.
What kind of music do you do? Do you do weddings, Mikey? What do you do?
I've been doing this for 25 years. I'm an old school hip hop DJ.
This cracks me up that hip hop is now old school. Okay, fine. Okay.
25 years ago.
25 years.
You know, 30 years ago, that was the creation of it. So But nonetheless, I'm an old school DJ, but I DJ all genres. But yes, I do weddings. I also do big club events and whatnot. But
have fun.
It's my passion.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it, Mikey. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. When we get suggestions from the chat room, and by the way, I love it when they do that. Thank you. We put them, everything I say, links to all of that in our website, techguylabs.com. In fact, you'll find a link to the chat room there, too, so you can join us in the chat room. 8888 Ask Leo, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nick in Divine, Texas, you're next. I like the name Divine. Hi, Nick. Leo Laporte here.
Good afternoon, Leo, and may the fourth be with you.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, Leo, I've got a couple questions for you. I have AT&T UVerse, and I have a new Panasonic Viera TV, smart TV. I want to go all internet-based material to watch TV, and I love sports, and so I'm wondering if I should upgrade using a Roku box, or is the smart TV that I have now going to be able to I don't know, I guess get those things that I want to do.
Yeah, so it depends which sport, because some professional sporting leagues have a more open approach to the internet than others. So which sport?
Well, I'm from Texas, so I love football.
All right.
So NFL and college.
Yeah, and the NFL for the first time ever 2 years ago streamed the Super Bowl, for instance, but you had to be a Verizon customer. Last Super Bowl, I think, was a little more accessible. So that's what you want. You want to know, okay, are you going to stream games or am I going to have to watch on broadcast TV? Because if you have to watch on broadcast, you can't cut that cord unless Divine is near enough a major city that you can get it via antenna.
No, I should be able to get it via antenna, you know, the four main networks.
Okay.
But, like, I don't know, cable, I can't even get cable in the town. It's so
small. Oh, wow.
I have to go to the dish, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah. So the MLB, Major League Baseball, has an app, which is, I believe, on Roku. NBA does. Hockey does. I don't think NFL has an app for Roku. And see, that's the problem. You know, it really is going to be up to the league to get with it. But they make so much money. The reason the NFL doesn't is because they make so much money selling to Fox and ESPN.
That's what I thought. And the NFL Network probably is only with Dish, so I don't know if they have the market cornered there.
Yeah. And that's where it's a little tricky. Now, on all of the above, there are blackout restrictions. So your local games, for instance, on MLB, you pay, I think, $150, something like that, a year for all the games except the ones you really want to see, which is your local team when they're home, right?
A little bit deeper in, then, I can I also like Rugby League, and I can watch it on my computer through live stream.
That's not going to be a problem. Yeah, rugby's easy.
But I've been going to live stream through the browser on my smart TV, and it's just not fast. It's really choppy, and it is unwatchable. So I don't know if my internet speed is too slow.
That could well be. Streaming video is challenging. If the Roku can do it, it will. Now, here's a link, by the way, from our chat room. Thank you. To a unique thing only on PlayStation right now with the cooperation of DirecTV. They put their Sunday ticket for the NFL, which is Sunday games only, on PlayStation Network for $150 a season.
Okay.
So that's kind of interesting. Do you have a PlayStation?
No, sir.
So smart TVs, Rokus, Apple TVs, PlayStations, Blu-ray, they all have some capability to connect to the internet, but they don't all have full access. You know, the apps are made for different things. In this case, you have to have a PlayStation. It's obviously a deal Sony made with DirecTV so that they would have an exclusive. We're really in a kind of in a mess right now because we're in a transition stage, right, between broadcast television, cable television, and pure internet television. It's only a matter of time before everything's on the internet. But the problem is figuring out the financial situation, because like I said, NFL makes so much money from Fox and ESPN, they're not going to jeopardize that. You know, and by the way, it sounds like this is all moot, because if you can't see the stream because your bandwidth is too poor, you're not going to do it anyway.
That might be the case, because I'm running through the phone line. I'm a Luddite, so I don't know a whole lot about.
It's not dial-up, is it? Is it dial-up? No, you have DSL.
No, sir. It's DSL.
It's UVerse, you said. Yeah.
Be the quickest. Yes,
yeah, it's
sir.
UVerse. UVerse has various packages. You might want to make sure that you are on their highest speed package. But I think the issue is going to be distance from the central office. On DSL, which is what UVerse is, you're coming in over phone lines. And DSL doesn't give you very high performance once you get more than 2 kilometers from the central office, about a mile and a half. At that point, it slows down to a speed that really isn't good enough to stream video. And my suspicion is that's the problem. You're too far from the central office. So you've got that issue. And this is holding back the idea, the dream, that we will be able to get online and see everything anywhere, anytime. I don't think people are saying, I want to pirate it. I think people understand they're going to have to pay for content. But I think they're willing to, but I think they want to do it in their way, as most convenient to them. So this is a little bit challenging. And I think that we're still working it out. The NFL is very limited in what it shows. And that's kind of the, you know, they want to be over the air. Now, there's this new company. This is also an interesting change called Aereo, A-E-R-E-O, that is designed to bring major market live TV, over-the-air TV, to your internet device. And it's very kind of interesting. It was created by the guy named Barry Diller. Didn't Barry Diller run Fox for a while? He was a big Hollywood agent. Yeah. You know that name, right? Barry Diller. Yeah. So, yeah. He started Aereo probably to get back at his old enemies. Because what Aereo does is it's an array of dime-sized antennas that they put on top of a building. Let's say right now it's in Manhattan in New York. And each individual subscriber to Aereo has one antenna. So that's your antenna. And you can then take the contents of that antenna, it goes into, you know, the computer the array of antennas are attached to, and then to the internet. So then you can, on your iPad, you can watch whatever's coming into the antenna, broadcast television, even adds DVR capabilities and so forth. And of course, immediately CBS and Fox and every other network said, whoa, you can't do that. And they sued and lost. The judge said, well, what are you talking about? That's renting an antenna. This Diller knew this, right? He said, well, I said, you're renting an antenna. We're not doing anything illegal. So the judge said, no, you can do this. And now Aereo plans to roll out all over the United States. They've already added a few cities. It's a very interesting idea. The question is, if Nick and Divine, who isn't near an antenna, isn't near a big city, could rent an antenna, let's say, in Dallas and say, yeah, I want to watch the shows in Dallas. It's kind of like cable TV, right? But he isn't in Dallas. Hmm. Of course, immediately CBS and Fox both said, well, if they do that, we're pulling our broadcast television off and putting it on pay cable. So there. Which, of course, they would never do. They seem unclear on the concept, right? This is free over-the-air television, right? It's sponsored, just like ours. It's free because it's got sponsors. So I would think the more people who see the ads, the more money you'd make, so you'd be happy, right? They seem unclear on the concept of what free over-the-air TV means. The truth is they probably could afford to do this because so few people watch over-the-air now. Most of us, 90% of us, watch on a cable system. And they apparently want a double dip. They want the revenues from the cable company, which pays for the signal, and the revenue from the advertisers. They want to put advertising on pay cable, right? So we're in a very unstable state, Nick. And there is no perfect solution, no perfect box. I have a Roku, an Apple TV, a smart TV, and a smart AV receiver. I have about 20 ways, PS3, that I can watch this stuff. And I still can't get everything. Not to mention that if you want to watch a show, you got to figure out, well, where the heck is it? What device do I turn on to watch it? Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. I think over the next couple of years, maybe 5 years, a lot of what we'll talk about on the show will be this exact problem of how do I watch TV like I want to watch it? And it's reminds me very much of what we went through with the music industry in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s, where the music industry said, oh my gosh, kids aren't buying CDs anymore. They're listening to these newfangled things called MP3s. And then Apple came out with the iPod in 2001, iTunes a couple of years later, and the record companies just, you know, they shut down Napster, you know, as quick as they could. Sued the heck out of them because they're stealing those kids. They're stealing music. Instead of saying, which they should have in hindsight said, oh, this is interesting. People who are buying the most music are interested in getting it online digitally. How could we make that easier for them? No. Instead, they said, how can we sue them? How can we criminalize that kind of behavior? And this is what, you know, it shouldn't be surprising because this is what always happens with established businesses when big disruptions happen. Last week I talked about Ned Ludd and the Luddites. Remember, they were mad. They were weavers in the 18th century who were mad that these new fangled automatic Jacquard looms were coming out and they destroyed the looms. They're changing. Instead of saying, how can we, what can we do to take advantage of this shift? What can we do? They said, let's, no. We want to keep making buggy whips. I don't care if there's cars now. We want to stay in that piano player roll, automated roll piano business. That's a good business, the piano rolls. We're making hundreds of dollars a day. It's always what happens. I don't want it to change. So the music industry held on with all 10 claws, saying, no, none of this digital stuff, but we wanted it, and we got it. And you know what the number one music store in the world is now? It's iTunes. Oh, what a surprise. And do you know that people are buying music? We're not a bunch of thieves. We actually want to buy music. Now, I understand piracy becomes a big problem when you digitize content, whether it's a song, a video, a game. It becomes very easy to copy it and transmit it via the speed of light. But I think you have to play upon most people's willingness and desire to support the businesses that make this stuff, to support the artists that make this stuff, to say, no, we like it. We want you to stay in business. And make, but we want it to be easy. And if you make it hard for us, we're going to choose the easy way, even if it means piracy. You're teaching us how to steal. So it would be really wise, I think, of the people who create content, of the cable companies, of the production companies, of the movie companies, to learn a little lesson from the music industry. See, they think the lesson they learned is, well, we're going to show them pirates. We're not going to let them get a foothold. That's not the lesson. What? Not the lesson. Oh, wow, we figured out the lesson. Be as greedy as possible. That's the, make your money now. That's not the lesson. The lesson is, people want to consume your content. They even want to pay for it if you make it easy enough. And digital's great. People love the idea that they can watch TV shows when they want it. Look how Netflix learned this lesson, because they had to. They're a modern digital business. Netflix was struggling because the motion picture industry didn't like the fact that you could rent these DVDs and then steal them. So they started putting the squeeze on Netflix DVD by mail business. They said, and they made all sorts of rules. Netflix wasn't getting DVDs. You know, they said, well, you can have it, but only 6 months after it comes out in the store, stuff like that. And Netflix streaming business was even worse. They weren't getting any content, and movie companies were stepping away. So what did Netflix say? Well, let's think about this. And I think Reed Hastings at Netflix, the CEO there and founder, very smart guy. And he said, well, we got trouble. This business is not going to last long. What can we do? Well, we've got almost as many subscribers as HBO. What if we act more like HBO and create content? So they started buying TV shows, House of Cards. And they've already paid for, it is thought, $100 million for the House of Cards, which is, by the way, great. Amazing TV show. And they gave people what they wanted. They put, for instance, they didn't put out the show 1 week at a time like a normal TV show. They said, well, we have all of them. They're doing a season at a time. They put out the entire first season on the first day. Do we not like watching, binging on TV shows? Is that not the greatest way to do it? No ads. You watch four a night. That's what we want. So Netflix said, you know what? That's what people want. Let's try that. And it worked. They made the money back in 4 weeks. They had so many new subscribers, it paid for itself in a month. They now have more subscribers than HBO. And they're doing more shows. They're bringing back Arrested Development. They're producing other shows. Amazon looked at that and said, oh, now they're doing it. That's the way, if you're a smart business, you look at the opportunity. You don't look at, oh, what are they doing? What are they doing to us? They're putting us out of business. They're a bunch of thieves. You don't criminalize your customers. It seems so simple somehow to those of us who are not in that business. I understand. I'm a little sympathetic. You build a business based around one thing, and all of a sudden somebody pulls the rug out from under you. It's challenging. 8888 Ask Leo. Call, say hi to the H-bomb. Heather's waiting for you. Mike in Syracuse, you're next. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I feel fortunate. The second time in 5 years I got through. And
it's amazing.
You helped me before. Maybe you can do it again.
Glad to, Mike. What can I do for you?
I'm running a Windows XP. I got a desktop, and it's about, I bought it, it was a refurbish when I bought it, because I tried the $2,000 laptop when XP first came out, and I had all kinds of problems. And I bought this about 5 or 6 years ago, and it's been great. I've been the XP Service Pack 3, but right now it's starting to get a little, I think maybe that hard drive, it's getting a little noisy. I can hear it when it wants to speed up and it slows down. And,
yeah, that's usually the first sign of imminent failure.
Yeah. I want to be proactive, so maybe I'll do something now instead of waiting till the thing goes down on me. The question is, do you think that I can get into another tower like I've got, real, real inexpensive? Do you think it makes sense to go to Windows 8? And I've heard a lot of negative on Windows 8, both on your program and, you know, elsewhere.
You know, we have to take a break for news. This is such a great question. I will hang up and I'll answer your call in the air. Window to 8 or not, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater. Our home theater guru, I should have mentioned this, Scott Wilkinson, is busy playing sackbutt at the Renaissance Fair. No, that's not a comment on his tights, although it could be. It's more about the instrument he plays, which is a medieval instrument that was a predecessor to the tuba called the sackbutt. And it sounds like an out-of-tune tuba, frankly. It's that distinct medieval sound. So he'll join us tomorrow with his home theater insights. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. Now, we were talking before the break about a very important decision. Our caller had an old computer, Windows XP. And, it, you know, the computer was starting to, you know, make funny sounds. So it's probably true it was time to get a new one. There's another reason. Windows XP runs out of runway in less than a year. Microsoft announced last month that they were only going to support Windows XP for one more year. That means bug fixes, more importantly, security fixes, will halt in April 2014. And you really do want to use an operating system that's being patched. Now, XP is so venerable. It's been around for so long and so many patches, so many people have banged on it. It's probably very, very secure, and I doubt that there will be any real issues even after Microsoft stops supporting it. But nevertheless, you don't want to have an operating system so old that nobody's paying any attention to it. It's a little dangerous. A lot of businesses still use XP. There was no reason to upgrade. Vista was no reason to upgrade. In fact, Vista was kind of a flop. Windows 7, I think, was very, very good. And is really, I think, the gold standard for Windows at this point. So the real question is, if you're going to buy a new computer, should you buy it with Windows 7 on it? And this is a bit of a struggle because most companies are selling Windows 8 and Windows 8 alone. But you can maybe go to Dell and other places, pay a little extra, and get the old Windows. So should you do that? Or should you, you know, just say, hey, welcome to the 21st century. Let's get Windows 8. In general, you always want to get the latest version of Windows. Windows 8 has some compelling reasons to upgrade. It's faster file copying. There's some big improvements, mostly under the hood. The reason this question comes up is because the interface, the user interface, is so different. Microsoft, they said it's Windows reimagined. Some have said it's Windows the nightmare version. Because what they recognized, or at least seemed to acknowledge, is that the world is moving towards a touch interface, towards tablets. And so they wanted to make one version of Windows, and this might have been where they went wrong, that works great on desktops, but also on touch screens, on tablets, as well as laptops. And so the question is, now, is this a good idea? And in my opinion, and the opinion of many, it was a bad idea. because it's a little too hybrid. You have what is ostensibly a very nice tablet interface. And if you, and by the way, if you're going to buy a computer to run Windows 8, you probably should get a touchscreen, because this modern UI, as Microsoft calls it, they used to call it the Metro UI, is very touch-centric. You know, it's really about touching it. And, you know, you get the settings, for instance. There's a keystroke, Windows key C, for the settings. But really, it's much more intuitive to slide your finger in from the right, to touch the screen and slide the settings in from the right. And that's where search is. That's where settings are. It really is nice to be able to do that with your finger as much as with the mouse, you can move the mouse to the lower right-hand corner or hit Windows key C, if you can remember that. But Microsoft also has a desktop, very much like the original Windows 7 desktop. And when you see the desktop, you go, oh, this is great. This is just like it used to be. Thank goodness I could still operate the way I used to. I can run my Excel and PowerPoint and Word on a desktop computer. And then reality sets in, because you move your mouse to the lower left-hand corner for the Windows menu, and it's gone. It's gone. There's no start menu? No. Yikes. That's when your troubles begin, because in order to get to the start menu, you have to tap the Windows key, and instead of a menu, you get this start screen that's really designed with big tiles to be touch. So you've got hybrid. You've got a mouse, keyboard, traditional Windows desktop smushed together with a touch interface. Worse, there's two versions of many programs. So there's Internet Explorer for the desktop and Internet Explorer for touch. And they're different versions of the same program. That's confusing. Which one should you use? I don't know. They look the same, but they don't all do the same thing. For instance, you can't play Flash movies in the the Windows for the touch version in the internet. It's crazy. It's crazy and crazy making. So you have a couple of choices. You could stay with Windows 7. Again, the gold standard for Windows, I think. Or you can make Windows 8 look more like Windows 7. There are free and paid utilities that bring the start menu back. One of them, Classic UI, is absolutely free. The one I use is called Start 8, Start and the number 8 from Stardock, $5. Brings back the menu. And if you're really going to go crazy, Stardock also makes something called Modern Mix that takes those full-screen tablet versions of the applications and makes them window just like traditional Windows. And then you feel pretty much at home, but you get the benefits of Windows 8 with the user interface of Windows 7. To me, that's probably the right way to go. And then maybe you'll get used to Windows 8. In my opinion, Microsoft made a hideous mistake. They did the wrong thing. It's very hard to think of what they should do. Remember we were talking about how the movie industry is holding on to the past? Microsoft said, we're not going to be that way. We're not going to hold on to the past. We're going to move forward. And even if our customers kick and scream, we're going to move forward. It's not going well for them. It's really, people are not buying new computers, partly because of that. So but on the other hand, had they not done it, might we be saying, gosh, Microsoft, really get a clue. You're stuck in the past. We might have. Might not have gone any better. So to answer the question, which is really the reason I'm here, should you get Windows 8 or not? I say get a new computer with a touch screen. If you get Windows 8, you're going to have a touch screen. And get Windows 8. If you're uncomfortable, and you will be, you can make Windows 8 act more like Windows 7 with programs like Classic Shell or Start 8. But really what we can do is shake our fists and say, Microsoft, there must have been a better way. Really, there must have been a better way. I don't know what it is. I mean, do they release two operating systems? Windows RT. I mean, they did. They have Windows RT and Windows 8. Windows RT, though, has a desktop too. Maybe they should have just said, no, we've got a tablet operating system. That's Windows RT. We have a desktop operating system. That's Windows 8. One has touch. One has big tiles. One has the desktop. And That's kind of what Apple's been doing, right? Apple has the iPad interface. That's not the same as the desktop interface, OS X. For reasons I kind of understand, Microsoft did not want to have multiple operating systems. They do, in fact. But they wanted to, but they all look the same. It's challenging. It's really challenging. My best advice, if you've got Windows 7, stick with it, frankly. I've been so tempted. I mean, I have a copy of Windows 7. I've been so tempted to install Windows 7 on this Windows 8 laptop and just kind of have done with it. But I want the touch features. I don't know. Big Nerd in our chat room says, and I think he's right, they were trying to be different and they failed. My suggestion is get Windows 8 because it is better. It'll be more secure. It'll last longer. And if you're uncomfortable, make it look like Windows 7. You can. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Woohoo. Back to the phones we go here. Let's see who we've got. Carol in Laverne, California. Hi, Carol. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi there, Leo.
Hey.
I have been trying for weeks to get through to you because I desperately need a smartphone, which I've never had. My daughter says I have to have one, and I know that your mom, I've been listening for weeks to you, and I know that your mom is trying out the Samsung Galaxy Note 2, but I don't know the difference between that one and the S4 that just came out. But I want to know because all my family has the iPhone S4, i5, S4.
No. There's two different iPhones. There's 4S's and there's 5's.
Well,
and they may have a mix thereof.
Yeah.
So if your family has iPhones, get an iPhone.
Okay. Tell me why.
Because, first of all, they already know how to use it and they can help you, right?
Right.
You won't be out in the cold with some strange operating system that they go, I don't know, Mom, what the heck? Secondly, the iPhone is probably easier for people who are new to smartphones. The iPhone is very straightforward. For instance, the user interface, it's just a grid of icons for applications. It's all about the applications. Once you learn the applications you want to use, it's very simple. And I think you'll have less trouble using it. Android is for geekier people who want more control over what they're doing. The reason I gave my mom an S, by the way, the opportunity I gave my mom was to choose between an iPhone 5 and a Galaxy Note 2. She never got to the iPhone 5. The reason she was interested in the Note 2, she's 80 years old. Her eyesight's not great. In fact, she's going to have cataract surgery next week. But that big screen, it's a 5.5-inch screen on the Galaxy S2, really appealed to her. The other reason she liked it, she's an artist, and it has a stylus, and you can draw on it. And it's big enough that it's so that those are very special needs that she had that might be different from you.
Right. Well, the main reason I was even considering the Samsung Galaxy, I guess the S4 is the new one or the Note.
Yeah, the S4.
Because of the larger screen, because I can see fine. I'm a little bit younger than your mom. I'm 73.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if
it's nice to have more. It's nice to have bigger text. It's nice to read more. The iPhone, unfortunately, Apple's kind of chosen to keep it pretty small. I think they decided that they wanted to make it so you could operate it with one hand, that it fit easily into a pocket. The good news is the iPhone, in the accessibility settings, you get your kids to show you this. Tell them, in the accessibility settings, I can make the font bigger. And that'll make it a little easier to read.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And it doesn't make the font bigger on everything. But it does make it bigger on text messages, the dialer, the things that you'll use the most, email. And so that makes a big difference.
I know it has the feature my daughter wanted me to have was the FaceTime.
Yes. Well, that is another thing. I can Skype with my mom. You can use Skype on any phone, but only Apple phones support FaceTime.
Okay.
So if your daughter says, I want to fit, this is why. They're in an Apple ecosystem, an Apple universe. You might as well be in that as well. That way you'll all be in the same universe.
That is great. Now, a couple of other questions on. What about the 4S versus the 5?
I think the 4S is fine.
Pardon?
The 4S would be fine. The only difference between the 4S and 5 is the screen size. And I don't think it's that much of a difference. It's one row of icons bigger, the 5.
And that's basically it.
That's it.
Okay, and my daughter wants to know, when is the iPhone 6 coming out, and what do you know about?
Well, we don't know anything because Apple doesn't pre-announce, but it won't be out till the fall, in my opinion. I expect it around September. But Apple, you know, Apple could put it out tomorrow. We don't know because Apple doesn't say ahead of time. We don't know what will be featured in the next iPhone, whether it'll be the iPhone 5S or the 6. We don't know. Probably, I expect 5S. Some think the next iPhone will have a fingerprint reader in it, and that will be the big new feature. Do you care about that? No.
No. No, I don't.
That's, by the way, why I don't think Apple will do it, because Apple's really marketing to real people at this point. They're not marketing to us geeks. See, we want all the bells and whistles and crazy stuff. You don't want that. You want something you can use.
That's exactly right.
That's why if iPhone 4S, you should go to the store and look at the two, see if you want the bigger screen. It doesn't change much. The 4S is a lot cheaper. It's a lot more compact. I think the 4S is right for you.
Leo, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Because I have gone on Google trying to figure out which one. I've been asking. And anyway,
you need the doctor to come. You see, you have to tell me all of your problems, and then I can take it and I can give you the answer. It's a magical thing that I do. That's why you need a human. You need a human being who's willing to listen to you and say, well, based on what I know, this is right for you. And it is. And the real problem is there's a great Nokia ad that's coming out now of a wedding party. It's hysterical. The groom's side is all using iPhones. The bride's side is all using Android phones. And they get in a fist fight. They're creaming each other. Your phone is a one-trick pony. Your phone is... And then the two servers, the waiters, are standing there taking a video of it all with their Windows phone saying... Why do they fight? I think they like to. It's a great ad for a Windows phone. I'm not recommending that for you, by the way. It is, but the problem is that if you go to somebody, you want to ask them, are you on a particular team? Whose team are you on? Are you on the iPhone team or the Android team? And because what will happen is their bias will influence their recommendation. People on the Android team will tell you get an Android phone. The people on the iPhone team will tell you get an iPhone. That's why I try to really use them all. And I don't think any one device is right for all of us. You got to figure out the right one for you. And that's with my mom. I gave her the choice. She never really used the iPhone 5 very much. That's an unusual thing, right? She wanted the stylus. She wanted to sketch. She wanted the giant screen. And by the way, she's been loving it. She took it home. She's been on her own for a couple of weeks now. And I was much surprised. Didn't get any calls from her saying, I can't figure this out at all. So I do believe that all of these phones have problems. I've been talking, and I will talk a little bit about the top-of-the-line new phones on Android, the HTC One and the Galaxy S4 a little bit, neither of which is the perfect solution. Unfortunately, the perfect phone hasn't been invented, but then the perfect human hasn't either, so we'll figure that out. Thanks so much for the call, Carol. I'm glad I could help there. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. By the way, I don't use an iPhone. I like the Android phones. But I'm a geek, see? I have different needs. More of your calls coming up right after this. Johnny Jet is here. Big old jet airliner brought him to us. He's our travel guru. JohnnyJet.com shows us how to use technology to travel better. Hi, Johnny.
How you doing?
You back home?
I am. I got back from Paris and Monaco. It seems like a dream. If it wasn't for the photos and the bills. It was like a dream.
It is amazing. That's one of the things I love about travel these days is You can be one place in the morning and anywhere around the world by night.
I know. It's amazing. It's and people just don't appreciate it.
No. There's a great Louis C.K. routine.
Yeah, I saw that. And he's so on. I mean, I feel the same exact way.
Yeah. But, hey, we live in an amazing world, so let's take advantage of it. Give us some travel tips.
All right. So I'm speaking at a conference in Tennessee in a few weeks. And the organizers, you know, they didn't want to pay for my nonstop flights. I was going to go from L.A. to Memphis to LaGuardia. Ugh. And the nonstop flights were, you know, $900.
They're a lot more expensive than if you have a stop in between.
Yeah,
that's because the airlines want to go to their hub.
Exactly. And there's no competition on that flight.
Right.
So Delta's the only one that goes nonstop on that route to Memphis. So anyway,
so they can make it higher. Yeah,
they put me on U.S. Airways through Charlotte, and then on. So I'm not flying U.S. Airways. Number one, and number two, I'm not flying on some.
Wait, you got to explain that. What's wrong with you? Really, U.S. Airways, is it horrible?
No, U.S. Air is fine, but you know what? They don't give me. They won't give me my emergency exit rows in advance.
So you have better clout with these others because you have frequent flyer miles.
Correct. There's nothing wrong with U.S. Air.
Okay,
except,
good.
You know, they nickel and dime you like everyone else.
You don't like them.
But, and then they were going to put me on one of their regional jets. Not even a regional jet, one of their props planes.
No.
I'm like, forget that.
There's no overhead room. You're jammed in. You That's feel right. like you're in a Twilight Zone episode. There might be a thing on the wing. It's scary.
So I did some research, and I was like, okay, I'm going from L.A. to Memphis to New York. I was like, what if I just throw in a flight back to L.A. a week later? And guess what? The price went down to $500 for an extra flight to L.A.
What?
So I mapped it out on my website. I'll tweet the link out so you can see all the screen grabs I did.
So what do you think's going on here?
Well, I think it's because I didn't have a Saturday night's day was one of them.
It's always cheaper if you can, because they know you're not a business traveler, they think you're not, if you stay over on a Saturday.
Not always, but on certain routes.
It's a good idea if you can to have a Saturday stayover.
And the other part, I'm not a travel agent, so I don't really know for sure. But I think the other thing was that I didn't return from where I was originating.
It was an open jaw. Why would that make it?
That was an open jaw.
Yeah. Why would
now?
You made it a closed jaw.
So,
they call it an open jaw when you go from one place and it's a round trip, but you end up in another place.
Exactly.
That's all an open jaw because you're like it's like two legs of a triangle. By closing the jaw and going back to L.A., it dropped it a lot.
It dropped it to, you know, it was $35 more than what the organizers wanted to pay, which was fine. I was like, I'll pay it.
I'll take the $35. Yeah, and I get an extra flight. Yeah.
And then you get an extra flight. And I might not even use it, although the airlines will not like me to say that to people because that's against airline policy.
That's so weird that you have to use a flight if you buy it. They're getting your money.
I know.
What do they care if your butt's not in the seat?
So always check, if you're doing a multi-city ticket, always check closing it out.
Okay. Close the jaw.
Close the jaw.
It may save you money even if you don't use it.
It makes no sense. And my other thing I want to talk about is, you know, last week when I was in France, we're talking about how travel's so easy for everyone. Mm-hmm. And you don't like it because you think it should be tough. And I kind of agree with you.
I got an email saying, what are you talking about? Because the whole, to me, a lot of the value, people who want travel to be easy are tourists. People who want travel to want it to be harder are travelers. The point of travel is to broaden you by making it interesting and challenging. It's a different language. It's different currency. The food's a little weird.
I know.
That's travel.
It amazes me that people do not like to get out of their comfort zone. Right, they don't want to go to a different country. They don't want to eat different foods.
Try it folks. It's great.
And one of the big things that people are worried about when they travel is that they won't be able to communicate, which I think is crazy, especially if you're going to a major city. But even if you're not, you're going to find someone that speaks English. And I've been all around the world. I've been to at least 70 countries, and I've had a problem once, and it was in Shanghai. But I've always kept this little book in my bag. It's a little picture book where I can quickly flip through it to point to any kind of photo.
Well, that's like a good idea.
Like a taxi or a telephone or first aid kit, whatever I need. And I never used it. And the one time I did need to use it, I forgot about using it. But
hand gestures don't always work.
And I just learned this week that there's an app out called Image It.
Image
it costs 99 cents. It's from a French company, but you can change the default language into English, Spanish, German, Chinese, Japanese, or Arabic. And, you know, it's if you're worried about traveling or not being able to communicate, it's something worthwhile to download.
It's 99 cents. It's iOS. I don't know if they have an Android. I bet they do have an Android version. No reason not to. But it's got pictures in all the categories: food, communication, housing, leisure, heritage, practical, health, shopping. You point at a picture. Oh, you want to buy stamps. And they'll know.
You're not going to need it. But if it makes you feel better, download it. It's 99 cents. And I'd be curious if there's other apps out there like that that might be better.
It's a really good idea. It's a really good idea.
Listen, I wish I'm kicking myself for not coming up with it myself because it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It is brilliant.
So, folks, if there is another one, you can email Johnny. What's your email, Johnny?
Johnny@johnnyjet.com.
And let him know and any of your thoughts.
Me.
Tweet him at Johnny Jet.
At Johnny Jet, yeah. Or you can even Facebook me. Actually, I prefer, I probably prefer tweet or Twitter or email.
And Imgit does have an Android version. I see it right here. So Android or iPhone for Imgit. That's a good idea.
And also a quick plug from my wife's blog since you got to meet her.
Yeah.
Last week online. It's O Travelissima. So, you know, unless you're a woman... Unless you're into a woman who likes to travel and is into fashion, don't even bother looking at it. If you're guys aren't going to like it because it's all for women and travel.
I like it.
But it's beautiful. She spent a lot of time on it.
How do you spell it? O-H?
O-H, travel, and then I-S-S-I-M-A.
.com. O Travelissima.
She works hard at it, and she's an editor of a big magazine.
So this is like... You know, I'm going to send this to Lisa. I just convinced her to buy six short dresses from Victoria's Secret, perfect for going to Greece in the fall, which is what we're doing.
See, and you're going to have a great time.
Yeah, I'll have her send that information to Natalie. O Travelissima. Sweet dreams at Le Maurice in Paris. Wow.
Yeah, so
this looks good.
And she talks about her shopping. It's just fun.
And shoes. Good shoes are so important for traveling.
It is, but not women's shoes. I'm not in the women's.
You're not gonna wear women's shoes?
I don't like shopping. That's the one time we fight.
Yeah.
Because she wants to shop, and I don't.
I want to see the sights. She wants to shop.
Exactly.
It's the number one problem with traveling. See, traveling is hard. Thank you. Johnny Jet is at johnnyjet.com. He's always great, and it's always fun to talk to you. And email him if you've got a question that he can answer on the show next week. He'll be back at the same time.
All right.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I like to travel. Somebody sent me, I was really surprised. Somebody sent me a note saying, oh, Leo, travel should be easy. Well, it is easy. It's very easy. It's so much easier now than it used to be. And I guess I'm not bemoaning that. And for some people, the idea is make it as easy as possible. You get on a cruise ship and you don't have to unpack ever again. You know, you just travel around and the towns come to you. But sometimes it's good to go somewhere a little challenging. Where nobody speaks your language, nobody knows your name. It's a little scary. And you know what? The feeling when you survive and you do well is what makes it worthwhile. 8888 ask Heather, you're a traveler. You like to travel, right?
Yeah, I'm excited for your Greece trip.
I am. I'm very excited about that. Yeah. Where's your favorite country?
Well, it's always Italy.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay.
Love Italy.
I haven't really done a lot of Asia.
So. No. Asia, Japan's next for me, but actually Italy's next for me and then Japan. Who should I go to next? Should I talk to Scott?
Exactly. Scott in South Lake Tahoe.
All right. Let's say hello. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Hey, a.k.a. G. Scott, your chat room there.
Hey, G. Scott.
So I'm another one needs a little bit of advice on devices.
All right.
Thinking about hanging up my flip phone for a smartphone. And, you know, one of the things, the Note 2 and the stylus kind of caught my eye. I do note taking, I do septic systems and such, you know, and so I'm in, you know, dirt. And so, you know, obviously that's an issue. But so the stylus I've used since the Palm Pilot and whatnot for taking notes, I'm wondering if voice recognition will be good enough for me.
Yeah, it's very good. I think
my screen.
I think first of all Android is using has the Google voice recognition, which in my opinion is better than Apple's marginally, but better than Apple's. Can do more than Apple's for sure. But also Samsung then offers on top of that its own system, which is based on V-Lingo. So you have a choice of voice recognizers, and maybe one will work better for you than the other. But I consider that one area where Android definitely is leading Apple is in voice recognition, voice commands.
Yeah, see, and that'd be good for me because then I don't have the stylus, the little piece of grid on the end, and scratch my screen.
Yeah. Well, one nice thing about the Galaxy Note 2, and it's part of the Galaxy S4 now as well, is you don't have to touch the screen. You can hover just above it, but that's not if you're underneath a septic tank. Probably hovering is no better than is touching it. Talk to it.
Yeah.
I dictate all the time. I dictate text messages all the time. It makes mistakes. It's never perfect. Occasionally, you'll have to go back and fix it, but for the most part, it's very accurate. If it's not noisy,
right? And I'm usually in a soil pit, and out in the woods somewhere, looking
it's
at the
quiet.
Dirt,
Yeah.
So I got peace and quiet. No problem.
The negative on the Note 2 is it's just big. It's a honking big phone. It's 5.5 inches, noticeably bigger than anything else out there. The tablet is great. It is a Wacom digitizer, so it's pressure sensitive. The stylus that comes with it fits right into it and is not going to be easily lost. I think the Note 2 is a spectacularly good phone. One reason I really like it is because of its size, they could put a pretty big battery in it. And battery life on the Note 2 is stellar. Plus, like all the other Samsung phones, you could pry the back off. And if you have a second battery charged up, just pop it in. I do that all the time. I find it very easy.
We have real limited cell service in my area, so that's not a big issue. This is, and it'll function as my PDA essentially,
right,
without the cell service. And it's a new gadget, so the stylus. So rather than the newer one that you have on your desk right there, I think Verizon has that. Not the HTC, but the other one you had.
Yeah, Verizon, I think, is going to have both. They certainly have the Galaxy S4 now. They've announced it available for pre-order. The HTC One, rumor has it, they will have soon.
Okay. Well, good. It might kick me into the smartphone world.
Your first smartphone, really, G. Scott?
Yeah. Well, like I say, with no cell service, it's kind of, pay $60 a month for satellite and so adding this, it's another $40 a month for the data.
I got to point out that in some ways, bad cell service is worse on smartphones because the battery can get drained very quickly as it seeks service.
Oh, okay.
So you might want to turn, if you know you're in an area where there's no data service, you just turn that off.
Okay.
Say, don't look for a phone because there ain't one.
Okay. Well, that's good, Rick, because, that's even an issue with my little flip phone.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It would be the same, and flip phone gets a week. So, absolutely, it'd be the same.
Okay, hey, can I ask you one other little question here?
Sure, Scott.
A friend of ours just got a Windows 8 Ultrabook, and I was helping her move the data over to it. And actually, I didn't really mind Windows 8. I'm still a Windows 7 guy, but I discovered some things, just by accident almost. But I could not find how to shut down.
It's kind of buried deep within there. And this is, yes, absolutely one of the things that's a negative on Windows 8. But once you know where it is, it won't take you any time to find it. It's in the charms bar.
Okay.
So over there on the right, if you slide your finger over from the right, this is the thing I was talking about, or you hit Windows key C to open the charms bar. That'll slide in over from the right. And at the very bottom, there's a settings. Now, you wouldn't think that'd be the place to go, but it is. You tap the settings, and then under the settings, there's power. And you press the power button, and then it gives you the choice of sleep, shut down, or restart.
Okay. Now, does she just want to close the lid and hibernate and not worry about shutting down?
Yeah. That's okay. Why they do this, because you don't ever shut down a tablet.
Right.
Really, a lot of what Microsoft has done with Windows 8 can be best understood if you think of tablets.
Okay.
And you never shut down a tablet, so why should you shut down a computer? That's why they can bury that. There's probably, although I don't know it, a keystroke combination that will get you to this faster than Windows key C, tapping settings, tapping power, tapping shutdown. There's got to be an easier way to do that, but...
That's a long way there. Yep.
Oh, okay, so here we go. PC guy says, let's try it. Windows key I. Oh, Windows key I gets you to those settings, and then you can just tap the power very quickly.
Windows key I.
Windows okay, key we'll I. Now, how you'd know that? I don't know. You'd have to read a manual. Oh, but they don't give you one.
Yeah, or call Leo.
Call me. And then I'll ask the chat room. Hey, thanks, Scott. Great to talk to you. 8888. Ask Leo's the number. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at Carbonite Online Backup. I'm going to talk a little bit about them. Then get to our next caller, Sivan in Yorba Linda, California. A little trouble intercepting Apple Windows. I don't know what that means, but what does that mean? What are you saying there, Heather?
Sorry, my shorthand's crappy.
Well, this is worse than Twitter. We have like 50 characters.
Seriously, tweet the calls.
You should tweet the calls to me. You'd have more space.
So that was my phonetic spelling, by the way, Sivan.
Incorporating. Oh, incorporating Apple into Windows. I get it. We're going to do that
Maybe
in just a second.
She used a shorter word. I don't
should
know.
I say Sivan or Sivan?
Sivan.
Thank you, Heather. H-bomb in our chat room if you want to say hi to Heather, our new call screener. She's just the greatest. All right, now let's say hi to Sivan, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Sivan. What can I do for you?
I'm in an industry and a line of work that's dominated, to say the least, by Windows.
Mm-hmm. Not unusual. Yeah. Windows for business. Huge.
Exactly.
Yep.
So I'm in a spot where we need to go ahead and completely revamp all of our computer systems and servers, and out with the old and in with the new. Part of the consideration, I have a punch list of issues that I need to consider when doing this. One of the things we've been toying with the idea of is going with Apple iMacs. And one of the main reasons for doing so was simply the aesthetics of it and the fact that it's all incorporated in a thin monitor. I can see people sitting in my office, and oftentimes they're looking off to the side and looking at this nest of wires, which is sort of embarrassing.
It is, yeah. If you're the guy who had to install that, you got some splaining to do, yeah.
Yeah. So,
by the way, there are many companies that make these, thanks to Apple, have been inspired by the iMac, that make these all-in-one now, many of them are Windows companies, so you're not stuck.
I'm getting conflicting opinions from different IT guys, so I thought I'd give you a call and see where you came down on this issue. Since we're dominated by Windows, people have suggested, okay, well, if you want to go with an iMac, people have suggested that an Apple machine will run Windows.
Yeah. Hold on a second. We're going to take a break around the top of the hour. I think if you're going to run Windows, you should get a Windows machine. And I'll give you some choices I think are quite good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle.com. If you're in the market, and I think a few of you are judging from the calls today, for a new smartphone, a new tablet, a new computer, you want to check out Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. Here's a place you can go to sell your old stuff. Maybe you want the Galaxy S4, the HTC One. Have you upgraded the iPhone 5 yet? You know you can get $10 extra on your old iPhone 4S right now at Gazelle.com. They make selling your used gadgets so fast, so simple. Find your item. You see they have phones, they have tablets, they have Macs, MacBooks. Let's do one. Let's say, I know. I'll do one here. Your Galaxy S3. Time to upgrade, right? You want to get the S4? Which carrier? You choose a carrier. Let's find the phone here. Galaxy S3. It's in good condition. No water damage. Let's count. $170. Well, that's almost all the way to the new phone. That's a good deal. Now, you throw that in the box. They pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. And by the way, you might as well sell everything else that's collecting dust in your drawers, your closets, your garage. iPhone 4S, AT&T, 32 gig, $210. Bing! Wow, that's awesome. Gazelle.com. Now, the good news is these prices are locked in for 30 days. So, you're not committed. You got 30 days to decide. Right now we're pre-ordering, so you probably might want to get this value right now because you know the price is not going to go up over the next few weeks. So get the best price right now, and you have 30 days. Gazelle.com. You get a check, a PayPal, or, in my opinion, the best way to do it, get that Amazon gift card because they bump the price by 5%. Gazelle. Get an offer, ship it to Gazelle, postage paid, get paid fast. Gazelle.com. It's no surprise they've paid out now $100 million to over 500,000 customers at Gazelle. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Hour number three of the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. We talk about computers, sure, and the internet, yes, but mostly nowadays about cell phones and home theater and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number if you have a question or a comment or a suggestion. We're talking to Siobhan. He's an IT guy responsible for buying new computers for business. It's a Windows shop, so he's got to buy a Windows machine. And question, your first question was, should I get a Mac? And certainly, you know, Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal said the best Windows machine I ever used is a Mac. I just read a review, I think, on CNET saying the best Windows machines are Macs because Macs will run Windows fine. I run Windows 7 on my Mac Pro at home because I want to play video games, and the games I want to play are all Windows games. And so I use Boot Camp. There's two ways you can run Windows on a Mac. One is in emulation using software like VMware Fusion or Parallels or the free OneBox. They'll let you run another operating system within the Macintosh, including any version of Windows. The other way to do it is to run what Apple calls Boot Camp. Apple actually has a utility that will let you install Windows onto a Mac machine, and then when you boot the machine, you get the choice. What would you like to do today, Windows or Mac? You hold down the option key, you choose Windows, and it runs just like a Windows machine. It is a Windows machine because these are both Intel-based PCs, essentially. There are a few things a little bit odd, but in general not. Remember, though, there is the Mac tax. You're paying a premium for Macintosh hardware. I think it's good hardware, but if you don't want to run a Mac, I don't know if you really need to buy a Mac. If you're just running, I would certainly not disagree that it's a great Windows machine. If you said we want, sometimes we want to run Macintosh OS and sometimes we want to run Windows, then a Mac is the only way to do it. That's really smart. But there are a number of companies now that make very nice iMac-like machines. Dell has the Dell XPS 1 that you should probably look at. They have touch screens. It's 27-inch. Running Windows 8. I reviewed them when they first came out. They're less expensive than a Mac. Actually, not a lot less. Come to think of it, if I look at it, kind of similar to a Mac, iMac. Vizio makes a very nice... Now, they're a new player in the Mac in the PC world. They've made TVs for a long time, but now they're making PCs, and they're... All-in-one touch PC from Vizio is gorgeous and very Mac-ish. And one advantage, are you going to do Windows 8, Siobhan?
I think I'm going to stick with Windows 7 64-bit.
Okay. If you were going to go Windows 8, I'd say you would definitely want a PC manufacturer because Apple does not make a touchscreen yet.
Because of our industry, there's a bit of a twist to all of this. A lot of the software that we have to run, for example, the manufacturers, I'm in the automotive business, so the manufacturers, for example, only make information available to us through Internet Explorer.
Right.
And it has to be Internet Explorer version 8 of all things. Yeah.
Not uncommon, by the way, for line of business software. We have the same issue with some of our accounting software. We have to use Internet Explorer.
And the other thing is, too, some of the software won't run on Windows 7.
Right.
It has to run on Windows XP. So within...
Wow.
Whether we were to get an Apple machine or a PC, we would not only have to have Windows 7 on it, we might have to have maybe up to two versions, two separate versions of XP running in like a virtual machine, because if you put two of the softwares on one virtual machine, they conflict with each other. It's
so, you know, Microsoft does offer a solution to that particular problem with Windows 7. They, when they started shipping Windows 7 Pro, knowing that this would be a problem for some people, they offer one that comes with XP and their virtual PC software that allows you to run XP in the on the Windows 7 machine.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So that because this is not at all uncommon. What's interesting is I don't think they offer the same capability on Windows 8. Microsoft's really made this decision to kind of abandon the past. And I think for a lot of businesses like yours, it's a non-starter.
Interesting. Yeah. The other issue that I've got, going back to the aesthetics, I use two flat panel monitors because I have to refer to one screen while I'm entering information on a different screen.
Very common, and a really great way to operate.
And exactly. I've tried three panels, and that's a bit much. But, you know, the two panels seems to be the ideal thing, and a lot of our part numbers, for example, are over 10 digits. Yeah. So you kind of have to look at one screen so you don't have to memorize all 10 digits while you're entering in another.
That's just kind of that's the sweet spot of setups. Dual 27-inch monitors is definitely the way to go for a lot of people.
The one thing going back to the aesthetics, however, is that if let's say I was to buy an iMac or one of my IT guys recommended the HP, I think he said it was the Z10 or Z1, the Z something. It's a 27-inch. He said this is a true, you know, business level machine.
Yeah, the Z1.
One of the issues is that I need to have two monitors side by side that are identical in appearance.
Yes.
So, like, if you go to the Apple store and you look at their current Apple iMac, you can the 27-inch, you cannot buy a second monitor that matches the iMac exactly.
Because the iMac has this lip where the goods are, and they don't need that on a monitor. So that would be a good argument for having dual cinema displays, the Apple displays, side by side, and either a Mac Pro or, I think, and this works very well, a MacBook with Retina display, laptop. Because when you put this laptop and you connect the monitors to it, the monitor has the right connections for it. It works with I understand you don't want wires, very straightforward, very simply. And then you just remove the laptop, go home, and it's the same machine. But again, you're running Windows. I kind of remind myself. I really think unless you are ever going to run Mac OS, it's kind of adds complexity and cost to be running Macintoshes. There are some advantages from your point of view, for instance, because you know, you could be running an emulation. You could it could help you with security issues if you did want to run an emulation. A Mac Mini might be another good choice, by the way. You'd want to have. Buy the Mac Minis with Thunderbolt ports, because then you can have two Thunderbolt monitors daisy chained together, again, simplifying the wiring.
It's funny you say that. One of my IT guys is someone who I trust implicitly. He basically made the same suggestion you just did about running a Mac. He said, you know, I should consider getting a 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
Fully bloated with the maximum memory.
Right.
And he said, he says that thing has got enough power to do anything I'll ever need it to do.
Absolutely. Anything. It's an i7. That's what I carry. And it's very easy to hook it up very straightforward to hook it up to dual Apple monitors.
Yeah. I think he even said that Asus or some of the other manufacturers make monitors that are Thunderbolt compatible.
Yeah, you can, yeah.
You know, he said you're going to be paying a premium due to the portability of the MacBook Pro itself, but he says that's a good option. Plus, you have the portability of it if you ever need to take it anywhere.
You have a lot of you have a lot of choices. It sounds like you have intelligent IT guys, and the problem is you have too many of them. And each of them is telling you something different. I've told you a third thing. In my opinion, you're better off if it's whether it's the Z1 from HP, the Dell XPS 1, or the Vizio One Touch. All of these have a real advantage. They're PCs. And you're not going to have driver issues down the road. Dual monitors, though, for you, that might be a different situation because no all-in-one PC has a duplicate monitor next to it. They just don't do the same thing. The monitor doesn't need to have all the guts that the PC has. So that would be a case where you'd get a tower and run two monitors off it or something like that. If you're using Windows, I can't see a reason not to use Windows machines. They're just going to have better support for drivers and all of that. 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo, Heather H., the H-bomb, screening the calls. You said, Heather, somebody, do you have a minute? Are you in the phone call? Somebody wanted to know where to get Windows for boot camp?
Yeah, that's how I understood it.
Yeah, so that's a reasonable question. We were talking about the fact that you can on any Macintosh, late model Macintosh, because they're running on Intel processors, the same as a PC, you can put Windows on them. And Apple provides a program called the Boot Camp Assistant. So what you'll do is you'll run the Boot Camp Assistant application. And what will happen at that point is if you have the right Mac. Now, I just ran it on mine, and I have the newest iMac with a Fusion drive, and the Fusion drive is not supported currently by Boot Camp, so it won't let me do this. But normally, you run, so that's a, by the way, that's a point. Don't buy the new iMac with a 3 terabyte Fusion drive because it won't work. You can't install Windows on it. But any other Mac, late model Mac, it'll then say, okay, what I'm going to do is divide your hard drive into two. And it'll say, how much room do you want to dedicate to Windows on this hard drive? How much room do you want to leave for the Mac OS? It'll do that. It'll churn around. And unless you've had the computer for quite a while, it shouldn't have any trouble. We call this partitioning the drive, dividing it up into two. Then it will say, okay, I'm going to reboot. Get your Windows disk ready. Now, this is where you need a Windows installer, just a regular Windows installer disk like any other. It's not a special one. It's not a Mac one. It's not an Apple one. It's a regular Windows installer disk. So the answer to your question, where do you get a Windows disk for boot camp, is wherever you'd get a Windows disk. Egghead's a good place to get one. You can, in most cases, use the upgrade disk for Windows 7. That's a good choice. You can download it. Microsoft lets you download it. You have to pay for it, obviously, but you can get the trial version. That might not be a bad idea. Schmanky iPad in our chat room says that you should just download the edition of Windows and try that, see if it works. Did I say egghead? New egg. I did it again. New egg. They all have eggs in it. They all have eggs in it. Winster's saying that 3 terabyte drives are now supported. Yeah, I heard that too. But maybe that's if, I don't know, because I just ran Boot Camp Assistant and said no, won't do it. And this is an up-to-date Mac, I think. Maybe not. If you're running 10.8.3, you can now put Boot Camp on the new 3 terabyte hard drive. All right, I stand corrected. So buy a copy of Windows 7 or Windows 8, a regular install disk, and now you're ready to go. And it's a great way to do it. I really like it. 8888, Ask Leo. Let's go to our next call, who's Ben in Stafford. Hi, Ben. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon.
Nice to speak to you.
Where is Stafford?
It's just between Manchester and Birmingham. So it's sort of in the middle of the country in England.
So it's not Stafford, Connecticut. It's Stafford, UK.
No.
Okay.
It's Stafford, UK.
I've never heard that Connecticut accent before. Now I understand.
Yeah, there's about 8,000 miles between
us. It's just, a little different. nice to have you, Ben.
For you, and it's evening for me, but it's always good to be listening to you.
Thank you for calling, and thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. What can I do for you?
This is probably something I could work out myself, but I thought it could be a good topic, and I know that for the last couple of weeks you've been talking about how you've been helping your mum set up LastPass
yes.
on her machine.
Yes.
And I know that Steve Gibson, and I listen to a lot of Twit content. I have a squeeze box, and I have it playing in the background. So I listen to Security Now, which is another podcast. And I know that Steve and you speak very highly of LastPass. And I really haven't used it. And I've been to sign up for an account. And I know that you can have notes on there. And I know that you can add sites on there. Yep. And I've even advised a couple of friends to get LastPass. But they want LastPass to sort of fill the details in. And I know that you can auto-generate passwords. And I just haven't really gone to investigate that. So I wondered what the best way was, in your opinion, to use LastPass. And I know you can get browser extensions and so on and so forth. And I figured maybe other people might be having an issue with that.
Yeah, too. I'm glad you asked, because I want more people to use it. It is a free application. There's a premium version that costs $1 a month, $12 a year, and you use that version, gives you additional capabilities, chiefly mobile. Works on Windows, works on Mac, works on every operating system, portable, you know, works on iPad, iPhone, Android devices, and it is what we call a password vault. There are a number of these programs. There's even an open source one called KeePass, KEEPASS. But they all do the same thing. And as you said, we do a podcast, an audio show for the internet called Security Now. And our host there, Steve Gibson, is a real security guru. He really looked into LastPass and the ins and outs. And in his opinion, and I agree with him, it is the most secure, most robust system for storing your passwords. So the idea is like a vault. You put your passwords in it. You only have to remember one password. That's the last pass. You only have to remember the combination of the vault. And this is why I was doing it with my mom. She had a file on her desktop called passwords.doc. That wasn't a very good way of storing her passwords. Anybody could read it. The nice thing about storing it in LastPass is LastPass can't read it. They store your vault, but they don't have your password. You can have copies of your vault also on all your machines, so you're never in a position where you could lose your passwords. They're accessible on any machine, and as you point out, if you're in a browser, LastPass will automatically fill in the logins on most pages. So when I go to my Google or my bank or Amazon, I don't have to type in the login or password ever. LastPass fills it in. So that's nice. However, there are lots of times you want to save a password that isn't on a web page. It could even be, you know, the combination for a physical safe. So you can make secure notes in LastPass, and I've done this. And you can even put images in there. I've put my passports, my driver's license, my social security numbers, all that stuff is stored in LastPass, where I don't ever have to worry about a bad guy getting it, but I can always get to it because I have my LastPass, my long, random LastPass password memorized. That's the only password I ever need to memorize again. LastPass will generate passwords. And I do recommend you do that because now, since you don't have to remember them, your passwords can be long and complex. Use LastPass to generate passwords, and they have there's a variety of settings in the LastPass password generation screen. And, you know, because some places like a bank might say you have to have a digit. Some places may say you can't have punctuation. So you have some settings on here. I would set a password length. Might as well make it long. I have my default password length is 16 characters. I'm not memorizing it. You can choose pronounceable or unpronounceable. If you make it pronounceable, then it will be kind of like words, but not. I just did one. It's Mentris Eds Metro. That's a good password. You can add upper and lowercase, punctuation, and more. And LastPass will now save it for you, which is the key. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I'll continue on because I know. Hold on, we'll wait a little time. I know you're still listening, Ben. So to continue to answer, so I would have LastPass generate everything for you because that
is great.
Yeah, that way you don't have to make up passwords. I don't use generally what I do is 16, upper, lower, numeric, and special. I have a minimum of one digit. I do always say avoid ambiguous characters because ones and L's and zeros and O's can sometimes be mistaken. So I do that. And then I say require every character type. Now when I generate it, look at these passwords. I mean, 47WX! 4 capital J, lowercase r, capital EVN. This is this is a password so strong, you never have to worry about it. And it's automatically saved, so I don't have to remember it. I just have to remember my LastPass.
Well, I mean, at the moment, what I'm using is, if I'm going in and you add a site, it'll say enter the URL and enter the name and then enter the sort of like username details. But it doesn't seem to enter anything. It's not automatic. I don't know
right.
because I'm not using the browser extension or...
Yes, install the browser extension in all your browsers or it won't be able to do it. So let me go to... let's use a site that I don't have a password for. Let me think.
I mean, do you do it when you're on the page or do you do it ahead
yes.
of time?
Yes, so I'm gonna create a new account somewhere. Let's go to llbean.com. Oh, no, I bet Harrods has a website. Let's go to Harrods since you're from the UK. Harrods and...
Harrods very much will have a site.
I'll never buy anything here, so I'm safe because I can't afford it. All right. all right. No, so I'm going to register on Harrods, okay? So I go to the register button, and it's going to say, okay, you need to... fill this stuff in. And now I will fill in this information, although LastPass can. So this is Safari, but I can do it on Chrome or Internet Explorer. I have a LastPass form fill, which you can fill out these profiles for all your credit cards and so forth. So I'm going to use that and I'm going to click fill. So now it's filled in my email. It's filled in my first and last name. It hasn't filled in a password. That's still blank. So I'm going to go to LastPass, and I'm going to say generate, and that's one of the commands here. There's a generate button, and I'm going to say save. Now, that's going to save that. I didn't even look at what it was. It's now saving that into this Harrods page, and then I'll do various other stuff, you know, a security question. I wish they wouldn't ask for security questions. If they do make up stuff, because the security question is a real hole.
I never use autocomplete, but I know a lot of people that do, and it's always this sort of middle ground between convenience and security. So,
but that's the point. Yeah, LastPass will turn off non-secure browser stores. So when you first install it, one of the things it'll say is, "I see you've stored some passwords in a non-secure store in Internet Explorer. Would you like me to suck those out and then turn it off?" And you say yes. And now let LastPass do all the password memorization. Don't let Safari, Chrome, or Internet Explorer do it. Although you can. Those two are secure. But best just to keep it all in LastPass. And then there are sometimes you go to a page where it won't autofill it. So you either have to select the LastPass plugin and say autofill. Very rarely, but occasionally I'll actually have to copy it. But you can do that too. There's a if you have a – by the way, let me show you the generated password here. It remembered this. Generated password for Harrods.com. Now, I can go into this and edit it, and I can say, instead of generated password, I'm going to say, this is my Harrods password. And I'm going to say what my login is, because it didn't know that, so I'm going to fill that in. I can even put a secure note in here, if I want, you know?
Yeah, and that's sort of how I've sort of been using it. I've kind of been doing it the other way around, rather than
it's
using
best
the browser.
To automate if you
I was
can.
Trying to set the thing up.
Yeah, automate as much as you can. You can also say it's a favorite if you'd use it a lot. Require password reprompt for super security. Never autofill, auto login. All of these features, you know, are optional. And I didn't have my mom use any of them, frankly. The main thing is I tell mom, generate it, use LastPass to generate it and save it. That's the key. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm a big fan of LastPass. I was very impressed that my mom was able to figure it out, both with her intelligence, but also with the fact that I think you can, even a normal person, a non-geek, can figure out how to use it. It's a password vault. I use it to store more than passwords. I consider it a secure secrets vault. So put other things in there. Put everything in there. All you'll ever have to remember is your password for LastPass, and make sure that's a good, strong password. But something you can remember. That's the best way of making sure that your secrets are preserved. I put my passports and everything in there. And because LastPass synchronizes to all your devices, I just put it on my desktop. I now have on all my smartphones, my tablets, whatever, I have my passports. So that's a nice feature. It's really fantastic. So the question, and there are a lot of questions, if you really want to get into the details of how LastPass works. It does it right. I'll leave it at that. But we do have a Security Now show, an episode of Security Now, where Steve Gibson gets pretty nerdy on how LastPass works, the encryption technologies, and so forth. It's episode 256, so the short, and we'll put this in the show notes, but the shortcut is twit.tv/SN256. And you could listen to that. And if you really want to know, if you're a super geek and you really want to know, but some of it went over my head. I mean, it's pretty sophisticated information about the techniques for encryption and so forth. But the point is, it does everything right. For instance, and this is an issue with a lot of sites, they don't know your passwords. So if you forget your password, you're kind of out of luck because they can't recover it for you. If a company can recover your information for you, they know your password. So it's really great. They also have a lot of other additional features. For instance, credit monitoring, credit report monitoring, because you enter in your credit reports in there. And they have kind of rudimentary credit report monitoring. There's a lot of nice features. I use a two-factor authentication. The geeks will understand that. It means that to get into my LastPass, I not only have to enter my password, but should that get compromised, should somebody torture me and get my password, won't be a problem because you also need a code generated on my cell phone to get in. There's a lot of nice features. To me, this is it's free or $1 a month for the premium features. I think that just everybody should be using this at this point. Everybody should be using this. Changing your password is not the same as recovering it. If somebody can recover your password, they know your password. They can force you to change it. That's different. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather's been picking up some great calls here. I'm going to go to David in San Clemente, our next caller. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, thank you for what you do. All that I've learned about computers, I've learned from you.
Thank you.
Right now I'm in dire straits because I stepped on my laptop.
You stepped on it?
Yeah. You know, I was listening to your show. It's got to be a twist of fate because I was listening to your show 2 weeks ago and you had mentioned that XP was going to expire.
Yeah.
And my computer was taking a long time to download, so I set it on the floor and took a nap. When I woke up, it was still open. I just stepped on the screen. And
I've done that. Well, yeah, I do that all the time. I'm using my laptop in bed, and I'm too tired to kind of get up and put it away, so I just put it next to the bed. And you get out of bed, and boom.
Well, I have about 7 years worth of bank statements, taxes, and most importantly, my entire vintage radio.
Oh, wow.
Catalog on it. So I'm not sure what to do. So I went out and bought a new computer, figured I'm going to figure out how to transfer it. So I got this new computer, and what made things worse, I bought one with Windows 8, which is, I don't understand it at all.
I don't blame you.
You know, and
what I don't understand is why Microsoft did this to us, but that's you've heard me talk enough about that.
Yeah, and so I don't know where to go from here. I just ended up taking the computer back because I couldn't deal with it. I was wondering where can I get a new computer with Windows 7 on it, and how do I transfer?
Well, get it now because it's going to get harder and harder and harder and harder and harder.
Okay.
Yeah, once a new version of Windows comes out, it just, there's a kind of a grace period of maybe 6 months to a year, and then people just don't bother selling it. Dell will sell you one if you call them. You have to call them and say, I want a Windows 7 machine. HP probably will. Some people still will, and I don't blame you.
Oh, okay, because I've been to a lot of stores.
Going to a store, yeah. You can't go to a big box store, can't go to a computer store. They're not going to carry it.
Okay, well, that's good enough.
Yeah.
The second part is, how do I get my information if I can't see the screen or move my mouse?
That's a little more tricky. You might have to go to, I'll tell you what you do. You go to a store to buy a Windows 7 machine if you can find one. And you say, I'll buy this machine if you can get the stuff off my old one. Because what they can do is, it's a laptop, but they can still open it up, take out the hard drive. You could do this if you want, but you'll need to open it up, take out the hard drive, and get it. There's adapters made by a number of companies. I use one from NewerTech that will let you hook that drive up as a USB drive. And unless you crushed the drive when you stepped on it, and it sounds like you didn't, you shouldn't have any trouble.
I did not.
Yeah.
No, I did. Yeah. Fantastic.
So NewerTech sells them, NewerTech.com. They call it, let me see if I can find their name for it, the Universal Drive Adapter. It's cheap. It's like $25. And what it does is it hooks up to any bare bones drive, that is a drive without an enclosure, including laptop drives, and turns it into a USB drive. Now, you wouldn't want to run it this way permanently, but you could do it temporarily. And so it's just enough to hook it up to your new computer and just suck all the data off. The reason I'd say when you buy a new computer, you should ask them if they'll do it, because they probably have this. And they certainly know how to remove the hard drive. Now, you can also, Glitch is pointing out, and this is really true, just because your monitor doesn't work, you could hook up external mouse, keyboard, and monitor to your laptop, and it may well work. You wouldn't want to leave it that way forever, but it might be enough for you just to get the data off.
Yeah, that might work. I would have to go out and get one, so I might as well just go get a new computer and have one of
them. Yeah, actually, if you get it, yeah, there you go. But yeah, if you're getting a new computer, if you get a desktop instead of a laptop, or you have a friend who has a mouse, USB mouse, and USB keyboard, and because most laptops have an external monitor connector, that should still work. And that would be, again, ugly. Probably not desirable, although I know people who've used laptops for years that way. And then hook it up. And you should be able to see what you're doing. But I like having these universal drive connectors. Now, it's $40 from NewerTech. Somebody in the chat room said Fry's has them for like $10. It's a very straightforward thing. You want something, though, that'll power a laptop drive. Laptop drives are a little bit different in terms of connectors. They have to have power as well as data connections. Thanks for the call. Good luck, David. Sorry you stepped on your laptop. Scott in Yucaipa.
How are you doing?
Hey, Scott. Leo Laporte.
I just got an iPhone 5.
Good.
Upgraded for my iPhone 4, which I didn't want to do, but my home button died, and so I didn't have a choice. Well, I had a choice. I could have gone with something else. But in any case, I went with an iPhone 5.
Good choice.
And I'm very happy.
Yes.
It goes data's quick. I can get on and off the internet great.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. They transferred over my contacts, and I went home and plugged in my phone to my iMac.
Yeah.
And it said, you need to have a higher version of iTunes.
Yeah.
In order to run your...
Isn't that nice? Phone. Isn't that sweet?
It's wonderful that they did that for me. And then, so I downloaded that.
Hold on a second, because we got to take a break, but I've got a better way. It's going to be easier than you think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I hate that feeling. Thank you, Apple. Didn't mention that. Our show today brought to you by my good buddies at stamps.com. I love stamps.com. I use them here at the office. Anybody who does a lot of mailing is going to want to know about stamps.com because it has one chief feature. It's postage on demand. You can print your own postage from your computer and your printer. So the chief feature, in my opinion, of stamps.com is you'll never have to go to the post office again. No more finding a parking place, waiting in line. No more buying stamps. No more bringing in a postage meter to get it recharged. You don't need a postage meter. You just need stamps.com and your computer, your printer. Nothing special. Well, stamps.com is pretty special. Because for a small business like mine, it's really the way to run smoothly. Anytime you're doing any mailing, invoices, mailers, if you're doing fulfillment, like maybe you're an eBay seller or an Etsy seller, stamps.com is a miracle. Any class of postage. There are no hidden fees or long-term meter commitments. You save up to 80% compared to a postage meter. You could print right on the envelope, not just the postage, but the addresses, the return address, the to address, pulls both of those from the address book or QuickBooks or the website. Your logo, it's just very pro-looking. Mailing labels, same thing. If you're an eBay, Amazon, Etsy, PayPal seller, it just takes it right out of the webpage. International mail, no problem. It'll fill out the forms, print them out for you. And then the beauty part is the mail carrier comes to your door. They do it anyway, but you can make a special, you can free to, you know, schedule a pickup. They'll come to your door. You just give it to them. You never have to get up from your desk. Stamps.com makes you look more professional, and it also saves you money. In fact, you get discounts from Stamps.com you cannot get at the post office on Priority Mail, on Express Mail. You can use cost codes to track postage spending by customer. Automatic address verification, because you're online, right? It's just really the way to go. Now, if you go to stamps.com, there's a special trial offer. Pretty attractive one right on the front page, $80, you know. But this is even better. Click the microphone, that old-fashioned microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Enter the offer code TECHGUY, two words, and the $80 value suddenly becomes a $110 bonus value, including $55 in free postage to use over the first few months of your stamps account. The digital scale that we love, that's free. It's a USB scale, so you always have the right postage. A supply kit and a four-week trial. You pay just the shipping and handling for the scale, and that's it. And yours, it's yours to keep, if, even if you don't stick around with Stamps.com. You're going to like it. Stamps.com. Try it right now. Use the offer code TECHSPACEGUY, two words, TECHGUY, for that $109 bonus offer. I think you'll like it. We use it all the time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Scott kind of got a little surprise. He bought a new iPhone 5. Turns out it won't work unless you're using iTunes 11. Whoa.
No.
And I presume you're using...
That, when I tried to download that iTunes 11, it tells me that my operating system is too low, too. So I'd have to do something else with that.
Yeah, you basically, if you want to use your new iPhone, you got to buy a new computer, dude.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but we're not going to make you do that. Because the good news is you no longer have to connect an iPhone to iTunes.
Oh, okay.
So here's the good news. Do you have a lot of stuff you want to sync up? Is that why you wanted to hook it up?
Well, usually that's the only way I've ever synced before. I've never
It does it over the air now. It does it via Wi-Fi now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, you might want to upgrade your iTunes to do this. And you may have to. I don't know. It depends how old your iTunes is. But if you use iTunes Match, for instance, $25 a year, and you only need to pay for it once. I'd pay for it once. It will upload all your music, match all your music in the cloud, and then it shows up on your phone, and you pick the songs you want.
Huh.
So you don't have to do that anymore.
That's the thought.
Yeah, and you know, basically, I no longer hook it up to iTunes, and Apple realized that was kind of an unnecessary requirement.
I didn't know there was any other way to connect all of your stuff that you have.
Yeah. The iCloud will get your address book, your calendar, and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Now, it does kind of depend. If you're really, really on an old Mac, you may not be able to do that anymore. But anything fairly recent, not a problem. It is unfortunate. I guess this is the way of the world in technology, right? You have to have, you know, relatively modern system. But Apple has decided that it's no longer necessary to hook it up to iTunes. So you can use iCloud on your computer and iTunes Match on your computer, and that way you're set. Or sync everything to the Google. You know, maybe this is even easier. I use Amazon Music, for instance. Sync it all to Amazon Music or Google Music. Those are both free services, and then download it that way. But since you're in the Apple universe, try it with the Apple system. iTunes Match and iCloud. He's here, ladies and gentlemen. We call him the Gizwiz. You'll call him fantastic. Dick DiBartolo, Mads, maddest writer, and a gadget hound. And he joins us every week for a gadget of the week. Hi, Dick.
Leo, how you doing?
Well, I'm great. How are you?
I'm good, too. Thank you very much.
What do you got for us?
Let's see. Oh, you know, I upgraded Dennis's iTouch. But the thing is, there's a certain iOS. He had a very old iOS that you could only upgrade it on the computer. Oh. But then once you had the upgrade,
then. So you're saying you took his iPod Touch and put the newest firmware on it. You didn't buy him new hardware.
No. Yeah. We put the latest. I'm not going to buy him anything.
The heck with that. But so you brought it to another Mac, updated the iPod Touch, and now you don't have to worry about it at all anymore.
That is correct. Right. That is correct. Anyway, yes, for travelers, the Sonic Alert Sonic Shaker Clock. Okay.
Well, now, you showed me this before for the home use, where it vibrated the bed to wake you up.
The people called and they said, we have a travel version. And I said, well, the hockey puck thing that goes under the bed or the pillow's big already. How could it be a clock and small? And she said, you'll be surprised. So what it is, that they sent me one. It's very clever. They put the entire clock inside the little shaker thing that goes under your pillow or under your mattress.
So let me explain this, because if you're not familiar with the original product, there was a separate clock and a shaker, which would attach to the clock, and you'd put it under the mattress, in between the mattress and the box spring, or under the pillow. And then when the alarm went off, it would go and wake you up by vibrating.
Yeah, that's very good. Good, yeah.
So this, it makes sense. What do you need a separate piece for? Just put the clock in the shaker.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and then it comes with a little clip so that you can clip it onto your pillow at the hotel. That way, if you're a person who twists and turns during the night, it won't fall down and under the bed. But I find that the vibration is enough that you could just put it on the nightstand and it'll just annoy you awake anyway.
Well, but remember, Dick, this company, Sonic Alert, makes a lot of stuff for people who are hard of hearing or deaf.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So a vibrating nightstand isn't going to do any good for them. They need to actually be physically shaken awake. So for those people, you'd put this under the pillow, right?
That is correct.
Does it really buzz?
Yes, it's actually, it's 90 decibels. So it buzzes and vibrates. The numerals are 3/4 inch high, and it's kind of clever. The clock folds up from out of the shaker for use during the day at the hotel room. Then you set the clock and you push it down into the shaker at night so that it's flat enough to sleep on if indeed you put it under your pillow. And also, it's a decent price. The list price is $35. Amazon is selling it for $25.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Little built-in LED light for seeing the time at night. And it also has a built-in snooze alarm that goes off every 4 minutes. So there you go.
And it really, I'm looking at the video. It really vibrates.
Walking across the room.
Dick DiBartolo, Mads Maddest Writer. His website is gizwiz.biz. If you go there, you can play the What the Heck Is That game. What is that buzzing sound? He said, "No,
yeah. It's a new game. It's a brand new.
Oh, it's a brand new month for May. We've got a new game. All right. Well, let's take a look at this here. First of all, I'd love to know what that towel rack was from last time.
Well, you know what? 9 or 10 people got it right. So, what's your serious, real guess?
I think it's some sort of lid closer for a tin can.
Oh, you're. We would almost give you a correct on that.
I'll get a half a point. Arlene Francis will give me a hug and a half a point. Yeah.
So it clicks on to a paint can.
Yeah.
And so paint won't run in the rim. And the little magnet is, it holds your paintbrush over the paint can. So when you get a drink of water or go get a cup of coffee, the paint brush now drips the paint back into the can.
It's a magnetic brush holder for your paint can.
Right.
No, I can't believe 9 people got that right.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So all of them won autographed copies of Mad Magazine, but also a bunch of people who got it wrong got copies because Dick's just a sweetheart. He can't help giving people stuff.
People are very clever.
The new one is pretty obviously a heavy metal bracelet for for people who are into Metallica. It's a slap bracelet, though.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
No. The other answer is funny. A portable porthole. So wherever you go, you have a porthole.
That's for the paint can thing. That's good.
Yeah. And then what? The silly things. This is an air pass-a-through-a. I said, okay, that's stupid.
Called a hole.
For that. Yes, exactly.
Gizwiz.biz for your chance to play and win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, autographed by this guy here, Mr. Dick DiBartolo. Dick will stick around. He's going to do the Giz Fizz right after the radio show. If you're watching on the internet or listening on the internet, you'll hear that. And for those of you who would join us on Tuesdays for the Giz Wiz show at 2 o'clock, he'll come back with more gadgets for all of you at twit.tv, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, every Tuesday, around some of these same broadcast channels. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
Should I do a commercial right now before we go into our next caller? What do you think? I don't know. Anybody home? I tell you what. Let me take one more call, and we'll leave it at that. Bill in a Thousand Oaks in T.O. Hi, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I've got a problem with an HP Pavilion. It's got a dual core system in it, and I had a virus, and I went through the HP tech, and they walked me all through the whole thing, and we actually removed most of it as far as we know. But I've got a problem that's been ongoing, and it has to do with the automatic updates on this machine. I went in, and I...
I'm going to stop you because we're running out of time. It's you did not get rid of the bug, probably, because you can't remove bugs effectively without reinstalling Windows. This will also fix the update problem. Updates sometimes do get stuck, Bill. If an update fails, you can't go to the next update. And it's a lot of trouble, frankly, to unstick updates, but very important. It's probably why you got the virus in the first place. If you don't do your Windows updates, it leaves Windows wide open to infections. So let's kill two birds with one stone here. I'm surprised the HP Techs didn't do this for you. If you have the recovery disks or a Windows install disk, I want you to use those. You're first going to back up your data. You're going to run the Windows recovery. It's going to wipe out that drive completely, so do make sure you back up your data. Run the Windows recovery. It'll put it back to the way it was the day you got it from the factory. And now you run those Windows updates till there are none left. You'll be all caught up. Reinstall your data. The virus is gone. The updates are fixed, and you're good to go. That's the right way to do this. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.